Thank you, Gordon. Members of the board, board council, Mr. Watson, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak to you briefly this afternoon about some of the concerns and some of the requests of Santa Claus County. As I'm sure you're aware, the county has significant concern over the employer contribution rate recommended in the draft actuarial report issued by EFB Actuaries on March 18, 2009. The rates recommended in this report will result in the county's cost of retirement increasing from $36.3 million in fiscal year 2008 to 2009 to over $59 million in fiscal year 2009-10. This is a $22.7 million increase. In a year, we have a projected decrease in discretionary revenue of over $17 million. The result will be employee layoffs, furloughs, and unprecedented service level reductions for the residents of Santa Claus County. The county does appreciate the work done by Millman in identifying the flawed assumptions that were used to determine contribution levels and supports EFI actuaries' use of the most critical of the revised assumptions in calculating the revised rate. I do thank you for the work that you've done on that. We remain concerned, however, that the reserves established in prior years to fund non-vested benefits have not been incorporated into the actuarial analysis. The county reaffirms its position that when a program is underfunded as significantly as are the vested benefits in our current retirement system, continuing to classify reserves for purposes other than to fund vested benefits is both counterintuitive and illogical. I do understand that the responsibility of the retirement board is not to the county, but rather to the employees, both current and retired, who are or will be receiving retirement benefits from our system. I would ask you not to forget that almost 4,000 active employees currently contribute to the system, and each of those employees also expects the system will remain solvent so that they'll be able to enjoy their retirement years. Expecting that increasing the employer's contribution rate year after year to assure the solvency of this system is just wrong, particularly when a portion of the earnings attributable to both employer and employee contributions is sitting in non-invested reserves. The county did include a proposed increase for all retirement tiers of 6% in the proposed budget preparations. With this increase, the county general fund has a $34 million deficit in the budget for fiscal year 2009-10. In order to balance the budget, the county has rolled out a 36-month budget reduction strategy that includes the use of $8 million of reserves for each of the next 3 years. This also is unprecedented in our county's history. The retirement contribution now recommended in the draft actuarial report is 3.44% above the cost projected by the county, reflecting an additional $9.2 million increase. If this rate is approved, existing county employees will lose their jobs as a result of these additional costs. I believe that the county and Santa are both committed to ensuring the existence of a financially sound retirement system for active employees and retirees. It is a non-vested benefit the county would like Santa to consider postponing. I find it difficult to understand how Santa can continue to fund non-vested benefits when the result will be increased actuarial rates and the loss of jobs for many of the same people currently covered by our retirement system. Before the retirement board considers an increase in the employer's contribution rate, the county asks you to take the following steps. First, in calculating the retirement rate, please incorporate both non-vested and vested benefit reserves into the actuarial report calculation and base the new rate on the revised calculation. Second, immediately commission an actuarial analysis, and we have the tools in place to do that now, of the expected impact associated with fund losses experienced between July 1, 2008 and now. We've seen what the impact of the 25% assumption and the 30% assumption would be. Let's look at current market conditions and see, based on current market conditions, whether 25 or 30% impact as a true representation of the losses to the fund in the fiscal year 2008-09, or in fact, if that number should be higher. This would give both the retirement board and the employers an opportunity to begin planning for our future years. Third, we agree with the comments of your council, and it is the county's true desire to work as transparently as possible as we collaborate on developing a solution to what is an unprecedented challenge, both for the retirement system and for the county. We'd ask that you work with the county to implement a proactive plan, working publicly in collaboration with our contributing agencies to develop alternative scenarios to address the impact associated with the anticipated increase, with final determination relative to the final solution to be reserved for the retirement board. Historically, the county and San Sara have experienced a positive partnership, and that has benefited both of our agencies, retirees and active employees alike. By working together, we've successfully addressed many challenges over the years. We sincerely hope that San Sara will continue to support this positive collaboration between our agencies. We look forward to a solution that respects both the needs of retirees and those of active county employees. An agreement founded on mutual compromise and recognition that a sustainable retirement system can only be successful if both the needs and responsibilities of the employees and employers are considered. The long-term health and fiscal stability of our retirement system is dependent on the retirement board's recognition of this fact and your willingness to consider the implications of your decisions on both current and future employees and retirees. I do sincerely appreciate your opportunity to provide the county this time to present our comments and our thoughts relative to the results of the actuarial study and what we consider to be critical steps going forward to craft a solution that will make this a sustainable and viable program in the future. Thank you very much.
Okay, as I stated before,
we're going to go to the people who have submitted requests from the public, and then we'll come back to some board questions. In the meantime, anybody else who wants to fill out one of these slips so that we can call them, please take it up and go ahead. Lynn Betancourt, you want to speak on some items?
Yes, I wanted to speak on three items. Normally, I know that I'm during the time that those items are before the board, but I assume they're all before the board and the last one we take today.
Right.
The first one was the attorney's concept. I agree with county council that it was a wonderful idea to hire this external counsel to do this job. Very important to do that in this circumstance. I know that in the past, county councils have advised the board that there was a conflict of interest for board members because they were receiving retirement benefits, or might in the near future. And therefore, they were barred from voting in this body the last time we reduced benefits for retirees. I think that needs to be addressed specifically by you, sir, and not county council, on this particular matter and all future matters where there's conflict of interest, since you're an expert in dealing, she is not. Additionally, the actuarial error that we have here, that we mentioned the possibility of a lawsuit, or there was a discussion of the possibility of a lawsuit, which of course would fall in your shoulders, I suspect, and helping the board make a decision about that. The actuarial error in this case is the second strike for this particular group. But several years ago, when the county did a pension obligation bond, the county asked how much do we owe. This board told them how much, and they were off by $12 million, and at the time that was 12% of a 12% error. So at that time, they made a mistake. We worked with them to try to resolve the matter. They fired the guy who did the mistake, and they tried to make amends. We got back to Chris Upstall, who was an expert and did her job and did it well. But Chris is gone. Now we have other people doing the job, and they apparently don't do it well. I suspect that it would be a good thing for the county and the board to join together in that suit, because as I understand, it may not be as available to the county to make that kind of a suit, must be the board. but I think it's important that that be moved forward soon. The issue you spoke to about the fiduciary duty, and I know that one board member asked about the different nature between the fiduciary duty for an ad hoc benefit and a vested benefit, and I think that's an important thing. I note that the Constitution in the state of California says that it is a primary duty for all board members to vote to maintain benefits. It doesn't say which benefit, it says benefit. Very clear. It doesn't stutter, it doesn't say vested, it says benefit. These benefits were established as reserves. That's a commitment to keep the money there. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be there. It's an ad hoc, it can be moved. And it certainly is going to be a judgment call that we're going to make about that. We're going to get to that issue down the road. But the money was split. The county got their benefit in 1 year. They got their benefit each year. If you take a look at the history of this organization, you find out that many years the county paid no retirement costs. Zero. The reason why was because they got their share. A portion of it was set aside into another fund that the county ended up getting. That other fund happened to be the the lawsuit fund. It's still there. That reserve still exists and it could be used for this purpose. The reason that fund existed was we had a large lawsuit that was coming at us. We all knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. It was a Ventura decision. It disappeared. It was a significant amount of money. But the county said, the CEO came and represented the county at this board meeting and said to me, because I was the chair at the time, and said that the county would pick up that bill if we could use the other money for benefits. And the only thing we should be using the money for is benefits. So it paid for some benefit improvements that the county chose to increase. They did a bargaining deal with employees. When they did that, they increased the benefits. It cost money. The actuary at the time, Buck, said how much it would cost. They were wrong. But the amount that they came up with was what was pulled out of our fund, our reserve, and put on the employer's side to pay the employer's cost for the back cost of this system. The county then said, we'll pick up the tab for Ventura because we don't think it's going to be much. It ended up not being much, but still, they weren't going to come back to ask for more money on that bill. And they stood by that. But the CEO's office has changed hands. And another CEO more recently stated that he threatened to kick these retirees out of the PBGH buying group, healthcare buying group, so that we wouldn't have that bothersome group with us if the retirement board did not maintain the earnings assumptions rate. Now, that was a threat that was held to. It was agreed to by this body that we were going to, despite the threat issue, we're going to hold that for the next 3 years, I believe. And they've held to that. The result being, the county needs to pay more money. Well, your CEO came in asking for this and died. Now, he wants the money back that he forced you into not spending, not obtaining. That's craziness. Additionally, the county has bought more employees. They hired 1,100 extra employees than they had in 2006. Why were they hiring during this time? Well, that's their judgment call. But when they did that, they increased their cost. And that you can see reflected in the numbers. Additionally, the county has a policy. It's a bad policy. It's something county established. It's called FICE. Normally it's considered illegal, but the county has a policy to allow for annual sales back of vacation. Now, that normally happens in bargaining groups of about 60 to 80 hours at the end of a person's career, except for management. Management's allowed to sell back 320, I believe it is, maybe 315. That includes board supervisor members, as I understand it, elected officials as well, who don't use their vacation time. Now, management staff also has health care, just like everybody else has health sick leave. That sick leave can be converted to vacation time, so if they don't have enough, they can convert. Normal employees cannot. This allows and creates the spiking problem. These are bad policies. They have not been accounted for by any actuary up to this point. It's not mentioned in this actuarial report. The
our actuarial audit said we should account for this. It's a significant amount of money when somebody's at the top of their career, the top of their salary, they haven't paid in from when they were little kids, you know, started out in the county 30 years before, and now they spike their retirement by an extra 320 hours, or 315, whatever the number is. That, I think, the Board of Supervisors can deal with. Those are issues for the Board. Another thing that the Board of Supervisors might want to consider and put on your list of things to do is when the line's crossed, and it's not now, pension obligation bond. Like I said, you've got a lot of money. You did it before, and it depends when all the numbers line up. But it's what was done before. Another thing that I noticed in this discussion was there was a point about these benefits, they were called bonuses. Now, that's kind of a pejorative. Not a bonus at all. The supplemental benefit. If you look at the state legislature and the authorization, it's called a supplemental benefit. Not called a bonus. The supplemental benefit for CERS was just increased in 2008 by the legislature to allow the CERS board to make that decision, which you guys made, to allow for ad hoc benefit improvement in supplemental benefits. Even during these laws, that's kind of the law. The CEO's office has asked for a recalculation. I think that's appropriate and very good from all the way to now, so we don't have you guys coming back in next year and saying, oh, by the way, you know, we expect it for a 25% increase, but we're going to have to give you another 25% increase or whatever it might be. Take it to the 35% that Tom is projecting out might happen. I appreciate that. I also appreciate the transparency idea. I think that's excellent, because in years past it wasn't. We can also go to a third-year amortization for the county. I think that would be beneficial. The county chose to go to a shorter period. We changed our policy to go to a shorter period at the county's behest so as to save them interest costs. But I think they can pay it off anytime they want, but give them to 30 years. Additionally, it doesn't necessarily mean that the county's going to have to pay all that money plus interest. If we get good earnings above the 8.25% and above our administrative costs and above back to the 15% we were making in the past, because we can, this group, can make good decisions on how to invest the money and have. Decisions of investment have not been your problem. Maybe actuaries have, but not this one. And in fact, when those monies go up again, you'll have those excess earnings. Not a cuss word, profit. Not a cuss word. It's okay to have them. And when they happen, what are you going to do with the money? You're going to be paying back the county bill. That's an important one to take care of. Because the county has all the risk. If we lose every dollar in this system to that tomorrow, the stock market goes to zero. Who's responsible? The county is. The county has to pay. And they have to pay that before they can pay any other bill. That's in the state constitution. You're going to get your pay. They might sell a can on the courthouse steps, but you're going to get your pay for retiring. You may not get your ad hoc benefits, and that's what they're talking about now. And I really think that the discussion here is, what is your fiduciary duty? It's to maintain those benefits. Now, you may not be able to maintain them at the level they were. You may not, which we took a one-third cut, 2008, we took a one-third cut. All right. And you may want to use those reserves. All right. Use part of them as much as you need. It's $170 million. Nobody's talking the numbers here. It's $170 million. Your losses right now are 115, something like that. There's going to be more. We know that, right? So those could offset. And in fact, I think the county CEO is correct in saying use those monies as part of the calculation. But don't wipe out the benefits. Don't wipe it out to zero. I asked before when you cut the benefits, don't cut them at one time. We didn't get here in one day. Well, we're getting here real fast. But give retirees who are on fixed income, who don't have the ability to go fix this problem themselves, to go out and adjust their income over a span of time. So if you have to reduce, do it over a span of time. And maybe, just maybe, the system will revert. You know, when we set this money aside originally, we said, how long could we hold out with a bad economy?
Can I have you summarize pretty quickly?
I am right now.
And by the way, thank you very much for being coming. The amount we set aside was enough for 8 to 12 years of bad times. This last time we did it was, I believe, 12 years of bad times. Right now, there's enough money in that fund to pay for your death benefit, which is one. Take money out from dead people, and for the widows and widowers, it's a bad thing. Number two, for the people who are the ancient of us, the people who retired before 1981, those people who are out more than 20% on their cost of living, they need to be taken care of. They haven't got their money this year. Why? Because you guys closed it. And the third one is for the health care of elderly. That's us old folks. I'm on the younger one. But, okay, bottom line is, this money can be adjusted over time. And we may be able to come out of this thing. I believe the economy is going to come back. And when it does, you guys are going to make a profit because you've got money in the system. Nobody else does. Maybe we should have taken it out for the money market for a while. I don't know. But anyway, that's another thing. At this time, I hope to see you do more sharing of the problem. And I know this isn't the last time we talk about this. I'll be back for the rest of you folks. And I hope you next time have a way to allow the audience, the public, a better access. Thank you.
Mary Kyle? Is Mary here?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Boy, what I got to follow. Anyhow, I have comments for the board that I'd like to make on our public image. I'd like to state that the employees and the retirees are not the problem. Too often I'm reading in the B, and maybe it's the way the B reports. I know there's a reporter here, so I hope that will be taken note that, you know, the situation did not come about because we caused it. And it seems like the reporting and statements are misconstrued to the Bee, but, you know, the thing is I remember over the years when we were in labor negotiations for increased wages and benefits, I remember when the county had bad times, and they asked us not to take salary increases, but maybe there was other benefits they could do, and part of those benefits were increased retirement benefits and programs like that. That came over a part of time. So when there's talk that we're getting too much or we're draining the system or we're going to cause people to lose their jobs, I think that's an unfair statement. You know, if you want to go back and say, well, let's just take all those benefits away, then what about all that pay we gave up to help that when there were other bad times? So the only point I want to make on wrapping it up is that when you're talking with the D or if the D is reporting, that take in consideration that there's that it's not this adversary that it seems that it has been portrayed, but we do need to work together, and it's not pointing the finger at employees and retirees as being the cause of this problem. Thank you.
Is Bertha David here? Pat Blasky? Marlene Jackson?
Thank you. I didn't have a statement to make, but I did have a couple of questions from the board of things that I'm really curious about. Well, one of them is, of the investment earnings in excess of 8.1%, how much over the past 10 years has been in some way shared back with Sands Bluff County? My other question is, that's not my question. If Sands Bluff County chooses through its negotiations with its current employees to pay both the employee's share and the employer's share of their retirement costs, then those numbers should not be included in this $23 million number that somehow the retirement fund is gobbling up for them, because they chose to give employees that vested benefit, which is vested for the county. So when the numbers are skewed to make it such a big hit on Sands Bluff County, that number is included in that, and it was not their obligation totally to pay that. So,
those employer contribution rates don't include the value of the employer picking up the employee contribution.
Okay, and the one item that was a letter from the CEO to Tom Watson, it says, quote, the county's cost of retirement increasing from $36.3 million to over $69 million. This amount includes the employer contribution along with any negotiated employer paid employee contribution.
Right.
So how much of that is an obligation that the county is supposed to take? We don't have to take. That was my question. And another option I want to put out is that if possible, we could put a cap on this benefit fund so that the contributions toward it in the future could not, in total, have the fund be more than, say, 10% or 5% of the total retirement funds that are available for retirement. And that way, it would not accumulate a great deal amount, and even more than what we possibly needed.
Again, I'd like to encourage anybody in the future that has questions, you know, Tom Watson, you can answer some of these. I'm going to ask him to follow up with you on some figures you've requested. So hopefully Tom will get a hold of you shortly to be able to answer some of those questions. Adelaide Lopez? Teresa Greeshaver. Okay. Again, anybody else who has questions, please fill out a form and we'll be glad to have you speak. That's what this meeting is about. But I also want to give an opportunity for the board. I know the board has had a lot of presentations given to them. Is there anybody in the board that wants to start off with any questions? Some of the questions were submitted to you earlier. Do you want to address any of those?
Very much in evidence here throughout.
I've seen excess earnings plans from or provisions from one coast to the other. They generally don't work out very well. And part of the reason is that the concept itself is at least suspect. If in 1 year the fund earns more than 8.16%, clearly that's not excess, because the next year it may earn less than 8.16%. And what we're trying to do is maintain an 8.16% average over a large number of years. In fact, even when the funded ratio of the plan gets over 100%, when you have more assets in the plan than your target, it's not clear that you have excess or surplus assets at all. Because one of the things we've learned to our sorrow over the past year is the market can go down a lot and quickly. The only time you know you have excess assets is in, when you look at it from the benefit of hindsight. One of the things that we're doing with one of our other clients is developing a surplus policy. And it's kind of a funny time to be developing a surplus policy when we have anything but a surplus. But the point is that sometimes once we solve or work through the initial problems and we don't have a surplus, that's kind of the time to start thinking about, well, what do we do when we do have a surplus? And one of the things that they're doing is they're saying, okay, at such times we have a surplus, at such times we have more than 100% funded, we're going to start taking some of the risk out of the claim. We're going to start de-risking the portfolio a bit, start lining the portfolio up with the liabilities of the plan better, and over time, trying to pull some of the volatility out of the system. This also has a benefit for the retirees if you start backing up the annuity promises made to retirees in the form of high-quality bonds. So you're guaranteeing the promise first before starting to declare any asset surplus. Now, this is a difficult, complicated policy issue, perhaps, but the idea is that if you're ahead, you take some of your chips off the table when you're ahead. So the idea is, over time, that when you start getting to 110% funded, you start de-risking the portfolio to get you back down to about 100% funded and guaranteeing the benefits in the process. Guarantee the promise before making more promises. Maybe, then, after you've done that, let's say that you are able to guarantee all of your inactive liabilities that way and back them up with high-quality fixed-income securities, and you have a much de-risked portfolio, at that time, you might say you might have some excess assets. That's a way down the road. So, given the circumstances we're in now and way things can go in the future, I think that it's hard to say that any earnings of this fund are going to be excess for a very long time. Harvey talked about minefields. I just ran out in the middle of one. So.
I know from my standpoint, one of the questions that I'm still trying to understand is that there was a confusion or a disagreement on actuarial assumptions regarding the length of time that people would work for when they're taking early retirement, where we talk about how we're going to adjust because of reality as opposed to what was really happening, as opposed to the theory that was in the earlier assumption. My question, I don't know if anybody else has this in mind, is that given the economic situation, I've run into more people at work who are saying, I think I'll work a little longer. Are we possibly adjusting something that is going to come back the other way?
Well, we'll try to avoid that mistake. I've been talking with a couple of you about what the next year looks like in terms of our work product. We have two major projects coming up next year, and that's the June 30th of 2009 actuarial evaluation, and that's also an actuarial experience study for, 2006 through 2009, three-year actuarial experience study. It would be the meanest thing I ever did to have you deal with both of those at the same time. So what I'm proposing is that we go ahead and do, first of all, the actuarial evaluation as of June 30th of 2009. that's going to be a serious undertaking on all of our parts, because we're going to have to be dealing with the 2008-2009 losses and formulating perhaps and revising amortization policy and working with the county on their budgets and working with Harvey on our obligations. It's going to be a serious undertaking. I don't want to throw changing actuarial assumptions into the middle of what is already going to be a challenging undertaking. After we have come to some conclusion about that, at that point, I would suggest that we start talking about the actuarial experience. And one of the things I always tell my clients is that while Graham and I may know the numbers, you know the people. And so this will be the time to start talking about, well, gee, we may have seen some retirement patterns in the past. Are we seeing those now? And what are people telling us? And those kinds of stories and information that you have from the members can really inform the actuarial experience study so that it becomes more of an intelligent exercise rather than just grinding numbers. So I think we'll be discussing that at length. At least that's, at the board's discretion, that's the kind of thing I have in mind for the next year or so.
The other question that comes to mind is that we have three major assumption changes because of, I don't know if I want to call errors, but different assumptions in prior actuarial studies. And we feel very strongly to feel that these are changes that should occur. The question I have is similar to how we look at other things that we include. Is there ever a situation in which you recommend accomplishing the changes in 1 or 2 years or 3 years, or is it something that just has to be hit right away?
I can give, yes. I'll try to help answer. In the case of assumptions that deal basically with judgment, like let's say, for example, that we agree that the mortality tables need to be strengthened, that people are living longer than we're assuming. I would have no objection to grading that in over a period of 2 or 3 years, something like that. Now, the other issue is, well, what about these three areas in which Buck, used inappropriate methodology? The fact is that they were adding 1 and 1 and getting 3. I can't get around that. So in order to do, in order to sign a report, Graham and I are going to have to use the proper methodology and say, okay, this is the cost. Now, what can be done by the county? I mean, can they step up to that cost over, say, 2 or 3 years? And there you end up with an actuarial accounting and legal issue. On the actuarial side, I told you what your proper cost is, and at that point, my responsibility ends, Graham's responsibility ends. So we've given you the right number. On the accounting side, you would be contributing less than the annual required contribution required under the GASB Governmental Accounting Standards Board statement. And as such, the county would have to reflect on its books an NPO, a net pension obligation, which is basically a liability for the amount of under contribution. And, that can be done, and there are organizations that have such NPOs on their books. On the legal side, do you have the legal authority? Does the county have the legal authority to contribute less than the actuarial cost? And I don't know the answer to that. And on the fiduciary side, and this is more Harvey's line of country than mine by far, can the board still do its fiduciary duty and allow the county to contribute less than the full actuarial cost? And those are really issues for Harvey.
Again, does anybody on the board have a question for our actuary at this time? Any additional questions from the public?
Okay, I had about 12 questions ready. Number 11 and the other 10, I guess, were too detailed. What actions, there was one question here, what actions does the retirement board can take, would you recommend at this time to maintain the sound funding of the retirement system but could mitigate the increase in employer contribution rates? For example, lengthen the asset moving period, lengthen the amortization period, fund funded accrued liabilities, potentially shift non-valuation assets into valuation assets or others.
I think that we don't tend to recommend one approach for another, because every board is going to have different policy goals and things that they want to achieve. We do, however, recommend that we go over the options. And I think that two areas of very fruitful investigation would be, number one, looking at the amortization period. Lengthening the amortization period, as we saw here, will have a material impact on the county's costs in the near term. One of the things that one of the speakers pointed out was that we may have the market come to our aid. And, good returns on the market may indeed amortize part of it themselves. Okay, that's a possibility. The second thing is to consider taking the 2008-2009 loss and amortizing it separately and treating it as the one-time event that we hope it is. And that also can be done, and it can also have a material impact on the cost. So I think we just have to go over those options with the software, see what's comfortable, look at how it affects the funding ratios, and discuss it. But I think you're probably your best bet is in the
amortization area. Again, we have to be a little flexible. Can you just fill out a form, sir? If you want to go ahead, we don't seem to have the crowd of speakers that I anticipated, so we'll be a little more informal if you can give your name, because I don't have that.
Mr. Ford?
Yes, sir.
Can we ask for Rock to bail us out?
Hello, Tom Brothers, retired employee. I was just wondering, when I heard earlier that there had been a list of some questions that had been turned in, but they were too technical to deal with now, and things like that, when will they be dealt with? Is this something where technical staff gets back to the asker of the question and explains it? And if so, doesn't this really kind of work against that openness and that transparency that our consultant advised us to have? Are we too dense to not understand the questions that are coming from folks who are basically our representatives, or are we too dense not to hear the answers? Does it take too much time? Basically, I don't want anything that mitigates open, clear discussion of the issues.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to respond to that. You bring up an excellent question. We're working through both legal and mechanical challenges. Just as we have a challenge with this room, it's not the most comfortable. We have a chance to do what-if scenarios and some numbers. We have some questions that have to have some calculations done, so the extra has to have some time to do the calculations, and that's why we've given them some questions and asked them to come back. We'd like to do that in an open presentation. We'd like to do a lot of things in open presentation, so we've asked our attorney to give us guidance. We don't want to be negotiating, but we do want to be transparent with our questions. Tentatively, the next item on the agenda is to discuss exactly how we're going to approach this regarding the follow-up special meeting. There also will be other sub-meetings as people ask questions on the board and they get involved, but we want to be as open as possible, and we have to post them in Brown Act and all that kind of stuff. So the next item on the agenda, which we'll talk about, is future meeting and how to handle this issue. But before we go there, I want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity.
Again, we had a huge crowd. We didn't know what to anticipate. We're not sure what to anticipate in the future. We told some of these people there would be other meetings, and how are we going to handle it? So that's going to have to be a discussion of the board, and it, I appreciate everybody else's assistance in that. The question is, do we want to go to item number 8 and start dealing with that, or does anybody in the room have a question prior to that?
I have a question. Will the actuaries be at the continued meeting, and will they be there to answer the questions that are...
My sense is they'll be wherever we pay them to be.
Okay.
Is that correct?
And with answers to these questions that we have before.
Again, they can get back to individuals who have questions. They can present it in open session. That's what we have to decide as a board, how to proceed from here. And that will be the next item. Anybody else a question before we go on to the next item?
I have one brief thing. We didn't get a copy of the actual report. We got a draft report that's posted. Is there ever going to be a file?
Draft report was posted on the web? Okay, the draft report is posted on the web. They don't send the final until it's final. We help them give any changes before you make the final. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
And so there is no final yet because we haven't said, don't do the assumption A or B or whatever. So the draft is as current as we have, right? Again, I want to make sure that it knows that. We were attempting to put this meeting on the web, and I hope that will work out mechanically, so that everybody has a chance to hear it or not. Anything else as far as questions before we go on to the next item?
Yeah.
I can't see behind this post, I apologize.
Yeah, right behind you. Yeah. I can say two things. I can say from here up there.
Your choice.
My name is Rick Johnson. I used to work in the retirement system also up in San Joaquin. And I did drink out a while up there too, in between people coming back and forth.
Fine,
huh? Yeah, that was fun. And then Hick used to be in retirement out here and not doing that job. Two things that I just wanted to say. Basically, we had the same problem back in the early 70s where we had rates going way up. Two things happened. Number one, we started having an actuarial study done every year. With a major every 3 years, and we amortized those 30% increases over a 3 year period so that the county was helped out a little bit in the amortization. The second thing, from an employee viewpoint, a lot of the people that are getting some of the ad hoc benefits were under a retirement system that's far less than what you guys enjoy today. There have been a number of times when they've been increased. These people that were getting the extra money once a year now were under a system where they were getting far less in benefits. They used the highest 3 years instead of the highest 1 year. So it's just something to keep in mind about those people that have lost a lot to the increase in the cost of living. That's all I have to say. It is very interesting coming up to David what they all have to say and everything like that. You have one big problem in front of you. So good luck to all of you. Thank you.
Last chance for anybody before we go on to future meetings. And again, I want to make sure I don't miss anybody who's in my book. Okay. Tom, you want to start us off with item 8?
Okay. When we set this meeting, we anticipated it might go into a secondary meeting. And so we did request board members provide us with availability in the week of April 20th. We did an initial survey, and 7 members were available on Monday, 6 on Tuesday, 5 on Wednesday, 7 on Thursday, and 9 were available on Friday. Now, the survey is obviously dated, and my understanding is that the schedules may have changed. What we did is that because the highest number was Friday, April 24th, we have already tentatively reserved, well, we have reserved the Board of Supervisors chambers at 1010 10th Street for April 24th, 2009, for the afternoon of Friday, April 24th.
What time, John?
We anticipate 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We have the chambers available about noon to 5, but we need some time to set up, and my understanding is that there's a group in there that may not get out right at noon. So we wouldn't be able to get in and try to set up until it's a little bit afternoon for him. But that would be my recommendation, is that we look at it at 2 o'clock on Friday, April 24, 2009, about 2 to about 5, for the meeting to continue this matter with the public comment also.
First of all, I should check to make sure the 24th is worked for IFR, and you'd be able to come with that one for what if,
yep.
Or what quickening, and however you did it.
That will be the public, yeah.
Okay. And you'll have a chance to look at any second questions that have been provided or will be provided. And again, I encourage anybody that has questions to give them to Tom, our administrator. If there's some analysis that needs to be done, we do have to give the people a little time. Comments from the rest of the board?
One of the questions you...
Go ahead.
Okay. I don't have a problem being heard. But one of the questions that came up earlier was whether some of these questions should be answered directly to the individual that proposed it. My recommendation is that all questions be published with the answers, so that, again, goes back to everybody's hearing and seeing the same thing.
As opposed to being written as opposed to being represented in the next arena, but if we have a question in writing, I think it was possible to be in writing and should be made available for all to see. Okay, so what we're saying, and see if the board agrees, is that the questions that we've presented over time for, say, what if analysis or how does this work, would be sent on to the people that have to do the work. They would hopefully be able to then prepare to present both the question and the answer on the, what was it, 24th? And any question that anybody has, they give it to Tom, or any board member has, if they want to give it to them. Because collecting the question is probably more of the problem than anything else. We'll give our administrator that problem. We in turn can send it over to them, and they can come prepared with questions and answers. Is that agreeable to everybody?
Well, I think one of the things that we end up running with into this. Obviously, there's a lot of very similar type questions. Number one, I think we should probably give some kind of a deadline so that we have these questions in, so that we can again consolidate similar type of questions into one response.
How many days do you need them ahead of time?
I don't want to confuse, help me out here. The questions that I declined to answer were things like, how is the liability for retirees' annuity and pension or survivor death benefit determined? Is it the projection of current monthly benefits from the date of valuation through some one assumed normal age of death? How are those retiree payments who are older than the normal age handled? That's like all of pension actuarial science in one thing. I mean, I could write a book about that, and in fact, books have been written on exactly that. You know, how are retirees' vested cost of living adjustments determined into the future? What are the assumptions used for an active member who is 38 years old and has 15 years of retirement service credit? That's a couple of tables. These are certain questions that can be asked, but I don't know that they're necessarily dispositive or that useful to be answered, at least at any length. And so we could answer questions like that, but we would spend days doing it, and I don't know that it seems like a long road is pretty small out. Yeah.
So what you're saying essentially is there's a question cost benefit in answering some of the questions the board has asked. Given our current situation, I'm more inclined to ask them to go ahead and give a general answer to whatever is asked of the board or the public. I don't know how the rest of the board feels. Any comments for them?
I guess I'm assuming, well, I don't know what they say, I'll make an assumption. The assumption is that they sound like individual with my situation type questions. And that's all well and good, and I'm sure that anyone's individually come to the retirement system and can ask some of these questions, and we can get projections. Otherwise, I think we probably need to address the questions that are at hand and how do we move forward with our projections and our funding, and what is it we're going to do with the ad hoc benefits, what is it that we're going to do with the county contribution rate, et cetera.
those are the things that I think we have to take action relatively soon, and so we can generalize them in that, to those matters.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I actually submitted a list of questions that have gone, and I think...
I agree with Marie. I think that they should be posted. They addressed most of them in their presentation, but I think that the ones that are general to the significant issues that impact what's going to happen in the county and Sarah and among the retirees should be addressed. And should be addressed fully openly. And I think they should be posted on the website, and you guys ought to get answers if you can. I don't think you need to write books, but you know, when the question's stupid, say stupid. But,
I just have one more recommendation, because I've been hearing this question over the last, well, for a while now, but more so recently. And probably this is a request for you. We all like pictures. So the question about how the excess earnings are distributed, I think would be a helpful tool for all of us to have that is posted somewhere, again, reviewed after the meeting on the 24th. Again, I've been on the board for almost 10 years now, and I don't think there's been a year that this has not been discussed. But obviously, we don't all necessarily either see the same thing, understand the same thing, or choose not to. So if we can get some kind of a picture, if you will, of how the excess earnings are divided up into the various funds, including the county share, the rebalancing share, the ad hoc shares, et cetera, I think you can get kind of a comprehensive list. You can use those buckets.
One of the other issues we have to address is that Tom has worked really hard to try and get a time when we can all be somewhere. This group is hard to get all somewhere, and we have reserved ourselves for specific board meetings. We have one, what, Tuesday to the 28th. That's kind of an official meeting. I'm going to suggest to the board that maybe it makes sense to have the 24th taking additional input, but to delay the decision so we actually have the board meeting that everybody can attend. Any comments on that? The regular board meeting would be, well, again, I don't know. It depends on the crowd. I get to turn the administrative things over to Tom where we're going to be. But I just don't want to have a situation where we rush into a meeting room and we find that somebody couldn't make it because we didn't schedule it and we try and make a decision. So I'm inclined to hold the 24th and additional follow-up, what-if analysis, answer questions, allow the public that was not able to get in at the beginning to be there and discuss whatever is needed for the length of time we have to. And then to hold any discussion of actual action a little later. How does the board feel?
Personally, I think we should be given the option to be able to make a decision on the 24th instead of just delaying it. If we have the information and we've discussed it and we're ready to make a decision, I think we should at least have the option of being able to do so on the 24th. If we do need to, if we're not ready to make a decision, obviously then absolutely we should go to the 28th.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to wait until the 28th to make the decision. If that is our regularly scheduled meeting, the 24th should just be for additional questions of the actuary. My preference would be to wait until the 28th. I do not see how it would make any difference to the county for 4 more days.
Any other comments? I guess the first thing we have to do is we have to agree that we're going to have a special meeting on the 24th. Need a motion for that, Tom? Yeah, probably have to have a motion and a second to have a special meeting on the 24th. Can we do that?
I'll make the motion, Mr. Chairman.
A motion? Second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, we're committed to another day.
I don't know how to handle the other issue of what we put on the agenda, whether we allow for a decision or not. I don't want to invite everybody and say the executive decision and not give it to them. I guess that could happen. On the other hand, I'm not sure the other way works. So, again, any guidance from board members?
Yeah, I would speak on behalf of the county that if you're rushing this decision to somehow accommodate the county in our budget schedule, please don't. A decision is this important. You can wait 4 additional days and provide the opportunity to make that decision at your regularly scheduled time on your regularly scheduled meeting. That gives the greatest input and the greatest opportunity for those persons who may not know about the meeting on the 24th, but can be present and have already calendared for a meeting on the 28th.
I'm inclined to go that route. Any real objections from anybody?
Yes. I just feel that we should have the option. Not that we're going to make a decision, just the option.
Again, as you all know, it's a matter of how it's put on the agenda.
Exactly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest or make a motion that the agenda for February 28th include an item that's entitled Final Action on.
Okay, so your motion again was to go final win? I'm sorry.
Final action on actuarial evaluation report as of June 30th, 2008.
And on the 28th. Did I get a second?
Second,
okay. We have a motion to do the final on the 28th. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? One opposed.
Aye.
Okay. That's happening. So we have a special meeting on the 24th, which will take additional input. We have an action decision to be done on the 28th. Tom, does that cover everything on your item 8?
No.
Okay. Members forum. I have nothing, so I'll pass on to you. What do you have? Anything?
I just have one quick question. I just want to make sure I understand. On the 24th, we're going to get, I just want to make sure I understand what's happening on the 24th. We're going to get our questions answered here, plus we're going to get the different scenarios that are options that we have. And that's basically what's going to happen on the 24th, and then we'll make a decision on those on the 28th. Or are we going to make some decision on our options on the 24th and then make a final decision on the final report on the 28th?
We can ask our experts to do any type of what-if analysis or impact analysis on the 24th. We can ask questions, we can have input from the public, but we won't come to a final decision on the 24th. We'll postpone that to the 28th. So you can have the study, you can have the information available, you can look at it for a couple more days. There's also a question which we turned over to our legal people of how to bring in any questions that any other party, whether it be the county or other people have, and make sure that it's all available so that people can do what's needed. Now again, the 24th would be physically some for the supervisor's chambers, 2 o'clock, and that will be for input. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Huh? 2 o'clock, right? Oh, 28th, I'm sorry. It's 2 o'clock. It's going to be session. Yeah.
Will that be
measurable financial damages tied up, and what actions that you folks are going to take?
My assumption is on the second item that you're asking, and then the legal action, boy, I tell you, I'm glad to take that one over to the attorney. And I will not speak for them at this time as to whether we should or should not pursue legal action. And as far as the first question, and to who can vote, I guess, and every time that somebody's voted, there's a question of an individual putting himself out. For instance, if I believe I have a conflict of interest, then I pull myself out. Again, county council would give us guidance on that, but it would be only at the time of voting, I assume, that they would do that. Again, I would send that over to county council if you want to send some of that kind of outside council. If you want to speak to Quinn, there would be a determination in your mind of people being allowed to vote. How would you address that question? Would it be at the time of the vote, or would you want to publish something prior?
Your desire that I make some comments in that regard this afternoon, or give you give the board some advisory in writing, perhaps at another time?
Well, I think the issue we have is that the public wants to know that you have made some sort of recommendation. Let me ask you a different question, which is somewhat related. If you advise me I couldn't vote, I still have a choice of taking your advice or not. Okay, so in a sense, it's the individual board member that has to relieve themselves, remove from the office, unless there's a blatant situation. But again, I'm under the impression that if there's going to be a vote on something and the council, you see there's a conflict, you would say, excuse me, Gordon, I think there may be this conflict. You may want to choose to, retrieve yourself or take yourself out of the vote. I'm not sure if you want to sit there and tell me that I should remove myself from the vote on all these various possibilities without knowing what possibility is coming next. So I'm kind of inclined to think you wouldn't want to publish something ahead of time, but I don't want to speak for you.
With the chair's permission, perhaps it would be useful for me to make some observations. I'm probably be better up there because I'm hurting my back here. There are on now? There are two conflict of interest categories under law in the state of California. One of them is known as Section 1090, and that has to do with conflicts of interest which may arise when this board or any public body enters into a contract with somebody, anybody. And whenever a contract is involved, there's a whole set of rules that tell you whether you have a conflict of interest, an immediate interest, a remote interest, even whether the board can actually, if somebody has a conflict on the board, can the board even enter into the contract, or can it simply not? The determinations that this board is dealing with right now, which is in the ordinary course of your business, setting contribution rates, dealing with earnings of the system, what to do with that, do not, as far as I can tell, involve any contract that this board has entered into with anybody. And please, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know everything that's happened historically or what we're dealing with here, but we're basically adopting an actuarial report and setting contribution rates. There's no contract involved there. You don't contract with the county and say, here, you know, will you agree to these rates? You send them the bill. They have to pay it under law. So there's no contract there. And in terms of dealing with the ad hoc benefits, if you will, that's policy internal to the board. So there's no contract there. So that whole raft of contracts, conflicts of interest, we don't have to think about at all. There's a second law in California that deals with conflicts of interest is called the Political Reform Act. Part of the government code. And the Political Reform Act deals with any decision, much broader than contracts, any decision this board or any public body would engage in,
And it goes beyond the vote. It deals with the participation in the process of making that decision. So it starts way before a vote happens. And if you are influencing a decision or participating in a decision and you have a conflict of interest, you must recuse yourself. Under the Political Reform Act for decisions, it never, no conflict that any board member may have would ever mean that the board couldn't go ahead and make the decision. Unlike in a contract setting, if somebody had a real direct conflict of interest, it would mean the board couldn't enter into the contract. If the treasurer, Mr. Ford, if your wife, well, the classic situation was the state, was Bill Honig, who was the superintendent of schools. And the superintendent of schools was entering into a contract with his wife. And that was found to be a direct contractual violation of 1090 and a criminal violation, in fact, against the superintendent of schools. We don't have anything like that. So under the Political Reform Act, there's a whole load of tests. I'm not going to take the time tonight to go through all that. But here's where it comes out, and let me just direct the question directly to, I think, the person that we're most interested in, and the one who's most interested in, and that is the Honorable Mr. Hall, who is a retiree. And as I understand it, the issue is, can a retiree member of this board participate in decisions that affect either all retiree benefits or, in fact, affect the ad hoc benefit, the in-lieu benefit, supplemental benefit, whatever you want to call it, that is paid to all retirees, and as I understand it, is paid on the basis of how many years of service. In other words, it's a set dollar amount, and please again correct me, it's a set dollar amount multiplied by how many years of service that you have. Now, the Political Reform Act says really one or two things about someone in that situation. First of all, that is part of the business of the retirement board, and as I said earlier, if somebody was disqualified from doing what is part of the business of the board, then the legislature wouldn't have put them in that position. You wouldn't have a retiree member of the retirement system. Because they're always going to be voting on issues that affect retirement benefits. So that can't be the answer in and of itself. But what the law says is that if it affects governmental salary, and in this case a retirement benefit is generally considered to be a governmental salary, and if it affects the member no differently than a, quote, significant segment of the population in the jurisdiction, then the member does not have a disqualifying conflict of interest and need not recuse themselves from voting or participating in the subject. Okay, so understand the law is written by a bunch of lawyers in the legislature and interpreted by a bunch of lawyers and then by a bunch of judges. And so enjoy the Full Employment Act if you haven't already noticed. So I am not going to be able to give you an absolute black or white answer, and I can't give Mr. Hall an absolute black or white answer to the question as to what constitutes a decision that could affect his interest no different than a significant segment of the population. Here's what the law says about what is a safe harbor, okay? So that if your interest as a retiree is no different than either 10,000 other people, I'm sorry, 10% of the jurisdiction, or 5,000 other people. It seems to be so watered down, and your interest is so indirect and so watered down because it's so much like 5,000 other people's interest, that you're not seen to have a bias for your own personal interest in that situation, you wouldn't be disqualified. Now, I think in this county, it's unlikely that that there are 5,000 retirees? Are there 5,000 retirees? No, there aren't 5,000 retirees. And it's unlikely that the number of retirees in the system are 10% of the population of the entire county. So we don't fall into that directly as a safe harbor thing. If you met that test, then I don't have to worry about anything else. But then there's a catch-all provision that says, well, you might not meet that specific test. But again, if your interest is no different than the public generally that you serve, then you're okay.
So there's a big, terrible
gray area. And what it means is that there's no bright line. There's no 5,000 or 2,000 or 1,000 and I'm on this side of the line, I'm on that side of the line. You know, is my interest as a retiree a whole lot like a whole lot of other people? And the law basically leaves it to your good common sense. I hate to say that, but that's where it is. And the board, I will tell you this, the board has no authority to disqualify somebody. They tried that in San Diego County 2 years ago with the supervisor that sat on the board talking about health benefits, and the court threw it out. So the board doesn't have authority to declare a conflict of interest. No member of the public can declare a conflict of interest. It is up to the individual in this situation, particularly where there's no contract involved, that if you're involved in making a decision and you believe that your personal financial interest is so much at stake in participating in that decision that you ought to disclose your interest and refuse yourself, that would be the absolutely most conservative, careful position that anybody could take. The law does not specifically say to the retiring member of this system that you can't participate in a decision that affects not only you, but it affects a broad number of other people, and it doesn't affect you any different. You're not going to get more money out of this decision than 45 people who are sitting in this room. The law does not say that you must disqualify yourself. You have to sleep at night. You have to participate when you feel appropriate and you're responsible for that and you're not doing something for your own personal interest. And it's a very personal decision to make. I've said before, if you want to avoid ever getting hit by a car, there's two ways to go about doing it. One is just to stay in your house and never cross the street. And then you will be assured of never getting hit by an automobile. It's a simple solution. It's the most conservative way to go about your safety. So the other is sort of a common sense thing. You go out of your house, you walk down the steps, you look up the street, you look down the street, and get on with your life. That decision is a personal decision to the member, in this case, the retiring member. And sometimes the supervisor should be making that decision, sometimes the county treasurer is going to be making that decision. But so long as there is no contract involved, which leads to a whole bunch of other words, that decision will be made in a good conscience with the member himself. The law does not necessarily disqualify them, and there's no bright line test that I can make available to you to make that decision. So I hope that's not more or less than you were hoping for, but it seems to be an issue that we needed to address for people left tonight.
I appreciate your comments. I still think it leaves you with situations you may be asked questions by the individual. That's between you and the individual. But bottom line, what I'm hearing you is that each member of the board has to make a decision. And the board as a whole does not make a decision for somebody else.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you.
Where did we leave off on, I think we're a member of the forum? Oh, Wes?
I just want to,
just wait a minute for
you. Go ahead.
Yes, John? I just wanted to make an announcement for the rest of the board, and I guess those that are present. The Retiree Benefits Committee has scheduled a meeting for Tuesday, April the 14th. That's correct?
That's correct.
Garrett is the chair of the committee this year. I used to be the chair. Supervisor DeMartini is on the committee representing the appointed person. Darren represents the active, and I represent the entire group.
Just one thing for the actuaries. Will the issue of extending the smoothing period and extending the amortization period be addressed at the meeting on the 24th?
The modeling program that we demonstrated allows us to answer those questions as you have them. So if you have a question about what's the impact of going from 20 to 30 years, we can show you that instantaneously. If you want to submit them to us in advance, we're happy to answer them. But we don't have to do additional calculations. We have it set up so we can answer those questions as they're asked.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have anything further, Mr. Chairman.
Nothing, Mr. Chairman.
And officially adjourned the meeting.